Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
There are some memories you can explain away as childhood imagination. Dreams blurred with waking, tricks of the shadows, the normal creaks of a settling house. But then there are the others. The ones that feel carved into your bones. As clear decades later as the day they happened. I was only 4, maybe 5 years old the first time something truly strange happened to me. Too young to know what a ghost was. Too young to even have words for paranormal. But old enough to know that what I heard wasn't supposed to happen. It was late at night. One of those endless nights where the ceiling feels too close and the blanket too heavy. I couldn't sleep no matter how tightly I shut my eyes. That's when I heard it. A woman's voice. Low. Melodic. The kind of sound that wraps around you before you can even decide whether it's welcome. She was singing a lullaby. The voice filled the room like mist. Gentle, yes, but unmistakably there. My eyes shot open. The room was empty. Just the dim glow of the hallway light bleeding in around the doorframe. There was no one beside me, no one leaning over the bed, no one rocking in a chair that wasn't there. The only television in the house was way down in the living room on the other side of the house. It couldn't have carried that clearly. Not in the dead of night. Not in the stillness where even a floorboard groan seemed deafening. I sat up, straining to see something, anything. The song went on for just a few measures, then faded, as if someone had pressed pause on a record that wasn't playing. I don't remember how it made me feel. That's the strange thing. I don't know if I was terrified or soothed, maybe both. Maybe that's why it burned itself so deep into memory. What I do know is this. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't half asleep. The voice was real, and it was in my room. That was the first time, but it wasn't the last. A year or two later, another night branded itself into my memory. By then, I had a habit of sleeping with the light on. I was the kind of kid who found comfort and brightness. Sometimes I'd even pull the blanket up over my head, just so I could watch the golden glow shine through the fabric. It made a little world of my own. A secret cave where nothing could touch me. At least that's what I thought. One night I was lying there under the blanket when I felt it. A presence. You know how sometimes, even with your eyes closed, you can tell when someone has stepped into a room? The air changes. The silence tilts. That's what it was like. Someone was sitting on the edge of my bed, watching me. I knew immediately it wasn't my parents. The door to my room was old, heavy, and squeaked loudly every time it opened. You couldn't sneak through it quietly if you tried, but I hadn't heard it move. The silence was unbroken, except for my own quickening breath under the blanket. I tried to make sense of it. My young brain reached for the closest explanation. Grandmother, I thought. My father's mother, who had died before I was born. I'd had dreams about her recently. Maybe it was her. Maybe that's why I wasn't screaming. And then it happened. A hand pressed down lightly through the blanket, touching my arm. Not a brush of fabric, not a trick of imagination. A hand, warm enough to feel, heavy enough to prove it wasn't just my mind. I froze. My heart hammered against my ribs. And then, as suddenly as it had arrived, the presence lifted. The weight of the eyes vanished. I stayed under the blanket until I finally fell asleep from sheer exhaustion. For weeks afterward, bedtime became a battle. I cried, I resisted. My parents thought it was a phase, a child's stubbornness. But I knew better. Something had been in my room. Something had touched me. And once you felt that, the dark is never just the dark again. The house itself didn't make things easier. My bedroom was at the very end of a long hallway. At the other end sat the living room with the bathroom in between. During the day, it was ordinary. Sunlight spilled through the windows. The walls seemed harmless. But at night, it transformed. Whenever I walked that hallway after dark, I felt it, eyes boring into me from the living room. A presence hovering just at the edge of vision. During the day, when the world was awake and noisy, I could brush it off. But at night, when the rest of the house slept and the lights were out, it was unbearable. Until I was 10 years old, I carried a doll with me whenever I made that walk. She was my armor. Later, as a teenager staying up after my parents had gone to bed, the sensation never really went away. Even as I stumbled sleepily down the hall to my room, I could feel the weight of it, watching, always watching. And then there were the sounds, little fragments of activity in an otherwise empty house, footsteps when no one else was walking, the faint scrape of something being set down on a counter. Our kitchen had a screen door that led to the porch. It screeched loudly every time it opened or closed, a drawn-out metallic groan you couldn't mistake. More than once, I heard it move when no one was there. Once, I was standing right in front of it and saw with my own eyes that it hadn't budged. Strangely, that didn't scare me. The screen door always felt different, as if it were replaying old memories instead of making new ones. Like an echo from summers past, laughter, comings and goings that had gotten stuck in the fabric of the house. But the footsteps, the eyes at the end of the hallway, those weren't echoes. Those were happening now. When they weren't going away, childhood flickers become patterns, small impossibilities accumulate into a shape you can no longer pretend isn't there. For me and my friend Annie, that shape had teeth. We were 12, 13. Old enough to know how to sneak into late-night shows, old enough to trade horror paperbacks under desks. Annie and I fed each other's fear and curiosity. It was like a pact. We read every ghost story we could find. We watched the creepier films on television, and then we did the only thing kids do when they think they found a secret. We tested it. At school, it started small. A sensation, a cold that settled in one shoulder like a hand. It wasn't the room temperature or a draft from the window. It was focused, instantaneous, and unmistakable. You'd be sitting in a math lecture, and suddenly, it felt like someone had walked over your skin with ice. Sometimes, it followed both of us. Annie would look at me from across the classroom with the exact same look of alarm and curiosity. This is where the story shifts from odd to intrusive. We found an explanation online because that's what you do when you want to keep your sanity. You look for a label. Cold spots, the website said, are a common sign of a haunting. The internet fed us language. Once we had the words, the world rearranged itself around those words. Every chill became evidence, every creak a clue. Knowledge sharpened the sense until there was no escaping it. Annie's sighting came first. She told me one morning that she had woken to a presence at the foot of her bed. A tall, white, glowing figure. She described it in the quiet, intense way companions share a deeply private notice, like something too big for the day-to-day. She said she pulled the covers up and the blankets were freezing cold. That detail lodged in my stomach. Cold means the absence of warmth. Cold means distance. Cold feels like the outline of someone who doesn't belong to your world anymore. Not long after, there was the thing behind the tree in the neighbor's yard. I was reading in the living room as I often did, watching birds hop from branch to branch, when a slim movement caught the corner of my eye. A person walked behind the tree, except they didn't. The tree was small. If someone had been truly walking behind it, they would have come out the other side in a second, but the figure didn't appear on the other side. It dissolved into the trunk, like a shadow tucking itself into bark. I looked until my eyes ached and my heart did that threaded thing, half-beat, half-prayer. The neighbor was elderly and thin. I tried to tell myself it was him, but it didn't feel human, not then, not in the way that fist tightens the stomach kind of way. After that, we pushed the limits. We slept in the new living room while the house was under renovation, an architect's bone left open. a place where things might move because the furniture was few and the nerves many. Annie took the couch I spread on the floor. The room had a doorway leading to the rest of the house, but no door. It was a frame of shadow against the new pale walls. We were both teenagers in the same room, reckless around the idea of fear because we thought fear could be conquered if you pressed it close enough. At some blurred hour, I started to see it. Movement at the door that would stop when I turned my head. A subtle pulling back as if something were standing just out of frame, making sure I knew it was noticed and yet never showing itself fully. I told myself I was tired. I told myself eyes play tricks when you're young and hypnotized by your own fear. But then the morning arrived and we saw the table. Annie had set an almost full cup of water on the small round table. It seemed unremarkable at the time, until morning. The table lay upside down across the room. The cup stood on the floor directly beneath where the tabletop had been, upright and empty. Not a single drop marred the wood. No noise had woken us. We were inches away. We had slept through whatever force had moved that table like a hand rearranging toys. When you are young, this kind of evidence is a thunderclap. It wakes you. It reorders things. The house no longer felt like a place you lived in. It felt like a place that was living with you. We kept notes for a while, a private log written in the margins of textbooks and unfolded scraps, small records of cold spots, of doors that hummed when no one touched them, of shadows that favored corners where no light fell. We told each other stories like incantations. Remember the screech of the screen door? Remember the footsteps by the sink? Memory doubled as proof. The more we remembered, the more we believed, and the more we believed, the more the house answered. And then, as abruptly as everything had intensified, it leaned away. The cold patches thinned. The footsteps became less insistent. The nights stretched out into the steady hum of sleep again. By the time we were 16, 17, the house's urgency seemed to have worn itself out. Annie and I drifted into the ordinary chaos of teenage life. Tests, first jobs, boyfriends, the kind of exhaustion that makes ghosts recede into the periphery. For years, I carried a question like a pebble in my shoe, grating constant. Why us? Why then? Later, when I found pages and forums written by people older than me with similar memories, the theory that teenage girls attract poltergeist phenomena popped up again and again. Electromagnetic fields, hormonal fluctuations, the volatile energy of adolescent life. Take your pick of explanations. Science offers hypotheses that feel like clamps on mystery. And sometimes the clamps are useful. They stop you from flailing against everything you can't measure. But for all the theories, none of them account for the tenderness of some of those moments or for the exactness of others. There is a kind of intimacy to the things that happened in houses you grow up in. When a house knows you, knows the rhythm of your steps, the tempo of your breath, it can answer in small, personal ways. A lullaby in the dark, a hand on your arm through a blanket, a table that flips itself like an exclamation point against the ordinary. Those are not grand theater. They are close, domestic intrusions that shift your sense of what is possible. When the activity subsided, Annie and I kept in touch, but our conversations changed. We were no longer two kids daring each other to stay up and watch for shadows. We were young women who had been given a secret that was not ours to spend. We went to school, to work, we dated, we grew into responsibilities. Life's noisy fabric began to cover those thin threads of the uncanny. But the house remembered. It keeps memory the way some people keep photographs. You cannot erase it by choosing to look elsewhere. For me, those adolescent years left marks, certain smells, certain timbres, the exact way the hallway light pooled in the evening. Those marks tug at attention years later, like muscle memory reaching back for something it once used to do without thinking. If this were a simple story, the closing would be neat. The haunt stopped, life returned, everyone learned to live with a little mystery. But stories like this are rarely finished. The calm was only the particular rhythm of one chapter. What follows is not a crescendo so much as a slowing, a pivot, a adulthood bringing different shades of the same phenomena. The weird mutating into other forms we'd only just noticed. There are larger reckonings ahead. The way adult curiosity and grief open doors you thought closed. The strange comfort of recognizing voices on a recorder. The way loss can be answered by something you can't explain. If adolescence taught me that the house had a voice, adulthood taught me that sometimes voices speak back when you finally decide to listen. Time reshapes how you interpret things. What once felt like childish fear can become a curiosity, then research, then a method. I married a practical man who laughed gently at my stories and said he'd convene with the dead when he joined them. That kind of gallows humor keeps marriages afloat when one person believes the world contains more than the eye can measure. For a while, the odd things were small, an odd smell, a distant sound, and I kept them in a pocket in case anyone asked. It wasn't until my daughter, grown and visiting often, refused to sleep in a room that had once seemed perfectly harmless, that I understood the pattern had inked itself into new lives. She told me the room made her feel watched, like someone had left a smear on the walls you could not wash away. She called it creepy and then apologized for being dramatic. And that apology, mechanical, half-true, cut deeper than any demonstration. So I did the thing people on late-night shows do. I bought a recorder, a small clinical device that promised nothing but technical fidelity. The idea was obvious and childish at once. If something was there, I would capture it. If nothing was there, I would prove my daughter's fears were unfounded, and we could laugh about it. The universe rarely obliges such tidy plans. The first recordings were unremarkable. The hum of the refrigerator, a truck passing on the street, the buzzy comfort of ordinary life. Then I heard the laugh, a clean, bright sound of a child laughing as if perched in the very room where the recorder sat. Later, with the quiet and the patience of someone who has been living in a house that remembers, I listened through the tape again and again until the details, impossible and undeniable, emerged. There was a voice, low and male, close enough to be breathing on the microphone as it said, "Let me out!" Another voice answered with a softer cadence, "I'm coming. I love you." Between the lines were bangs and thuds that had not been audible while the recorder sat alone in that dressing room. These were moments that collapsed distance into intimacy. The microphone, dumb and faithful, had been given back language to carry. I went through the rituals you see in documentaries, replaying, filtering, seeking every natural explanation. Maybe the neighbor had been operating a noisy grinder. Maybe a radio had bled through on a strange frequency. I yelled, I tested, I triggered every appliance in the house to see if the sounds could be reproduced. I drove the neighborhood looking for an unlikely source. I recorded myself speaking the words in the same place to see if orbiting frequencies had fooled me. Nothing matched. The voices remained singular. The laughter remained a child's, bright and immediate. The recording sat in my bag like evidence you couldn't unsee. After the tape, I stopped caring about how I might look to others. I began taking pictures in the dark around the shed where my husband kept my late brother's records. I set motion cameras down low on the path by the windows. I'd climb out of bed at 3 a.m. and go stand in the yard and listen until the cold came up my ankles. Neighbors probably thought the couple next door had fallen off some sensible script. Let them. Once you've seen a thing that unravels your assumptions, the judgments of strangers become petty. Some things remained tender, rather than terrifying. There were odors, tobacco, ivory soap, whole roast dinners at odd hours that would float in for a breath and then be gone. They did not always frighten me. Sometimes they felt like the house remembering a meal or a hand scent long gone. Other times the encounters were claustrophobic. I remember one night when the air dropped as if a weight filled the room. My body tightened. I could not move. There was a pressure, a sensation of being pressed into the mattress as if something wanted me to stay. When it finally lifted, the world felt like a wet towel, wrung out, heavy, but alive again. Loss makes you hungry for presence. When my mother died, I felt it before I knew it was time. I woke as if something had rushed through me. her perfume or the memory of it, and instinctively said to my husband, "My mother just died." He slept through it, and I lay back down, the pronouncement hanging hollower than I wanted it to. Within hours, it was confirmed. How do you explain that? Premonition? Psychosomatic coincidence? It is easier to file it away as an oddity if that's what you prefer. I prefer the other truth. That my life had become a channel through which some people moved when they needed to use me. Soon after, the calls started. Once an old friend's number showed up on my caller ID at 5 a.m., a number that, when answered, transmitted only silence. Days later, I learned he had died the night before. Another friend called after his surgery, and the ID echoed his number even as he lay in the hospital and died. After my brother's sudden passing, the payphone outside the corner store kept calling my line. The ID read East Smitty's Corner payphone. The owner dialed over and over, a frantic, rhythmic attempt to break through. It was the sort of detail that felt less like proof and more like a conversation where the living and the dead used the same clumsy tools and hoped for recognition. Evidence changed how I interacted with the house. The recording had made me a participant instead of a spectator. I grew less afraid of the rooms that once made me clutch a doll and more interested in listening for pattern. If poltergeists come to teenage energy, as some forums suggest, then adulthood opens other doors. Grief, memory, the lives that never quite finished their sentences. The house responded. It spoke in smells, in the sudden displacement of a coffee table, in the mute hum of a refrigerator that would exhale wind on a cold night and then be still. Eventually, people asked me whether I wanted to be a medium. The question felt both flattering and grotesque. Labels can be tidy while the truth is messy. I am not someone who markets a talent. I am someone whose life has been threaded through with other lives. Sometimes I answer the phone and there is a silence that holds the shape of someone reaching across. Sometimes there is nothing at all. The choice to listen is mine and mine alone. What haunts one person can be a memory to another. Houses are porous. They take people in, and sometimes, if conditions are right, people stay. The only real advice I can offer is this. When a house speaks, pay attention. Not because you should fear it, but because you might learn something about how much of us quietly insists on being known. Even now, years later, I can stand in a doorway and feel the old compass needle pull toward the living room, toward that point at the end of the hall where someone watches. I still keep a recorder in a drawer, not out of a desire to prove anything to anyone, but because the microphone remembers in ways my memory cannot always hold. Once, when the tape caught a breath too close to the mic, I realized the dead can be loud in small things. A laugh, a whispered phrase, the scrape of a cup against a tabletop. They recite their lives back to you in fragments and let you decide if you will keep them. The house taught me how porous life could be, how fragile the membrane between now and then. It taught me the form grief takes when it refuses to leave the rooms where it once was. It taught me, finally, that listening changes you. And it taught me that endings are often only the first line of a longer story. A story that lives on in the sound of a lullaby that plays without a singer. In the weight of a hand on a child's arm. In the rumble of a voice saying, "I love you," into a small, faithful microphone.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.